The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.
Welcome, everyone, to the Book and Film Globe podcast. I am your host, Neil Pollack, the greatest living American writer and the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We cover the worlds of books and film and streaming TV and so much more, and we bring you this podcast every week. If you like what you're hearing, and I know that you do, please leave us a review on Apple or Spotify, wherever you listen to the show. Give us 5 stars. Tell the world that we're fun and brilliant, and we will be eternally grateful for that and also for listening to the show, which has been ongoing for more than 3 years now, which is kind of incredible to me, and I have fun doing it every week. And last week was great. We covered some important topics and some somewhat heavy issues. This week, we're going to return to our usual frothy mix of discussing things that are on TV and in the movie theaters. I'm going to talk to contributor Scott Gold about two new comic book TV shows that are out and are quite entertaining in very different ways. One is The Penguin, and that airs on Max and is based on the DC Comics characters from the Batman universe. And the other one is Agatha All Along, which is airing on Disney Plus and is a Marvel Cinematic Universe show about witches, just in time for Halloween. And Scott will be here to talk to me about those shows in a bit. And I'm also going to talk to Stephen Garrett about The Substance, which is a new body horror movie from a French director. It stars Demi Moore and Margaret Qualley. I could not bring myself to actually see this movie because it features things coming out of other things, and I just can't watch it. I can't watch that kind of thing. But I like to talk about movies, and Stephen sees everything, and he knows how to handle my neuroses, and he'll be along in a bit. But first, we're going to talk to Scott Gold about The Penguin, and we will talk to him right after this brief interlude.
I wonder how you see me, Oz, if I am more than a thing to play with. The family thinks I'm broken. I'm not broken.
That's why we gotta take whatever we decide as Oz.
I'm gonna force them to their knees. What do you say, Oz? You in?
It's Batman time again. The Caped Crusader. Well, the Caped Crusader is not back. He is not in the latest Batman product that is on HBO Max or Max or whatever you want to call it. He is absent, although his presence, you can still kind of feel him lurking in the background. The show I'm talking about is Penguin, and it is sort of an origin story about the Penguin. I guess the show is called The Penguin, and it's about the Penguin. Not Oswald Cobblepot. His name is Oz Cobb in this show, and he's played by Colin Farrell, and it's the same character who appeared in Matt Reeves' The Batman, starring Robert Pattinson, which came out a couple of years ago. And this is an origin story, a solo project for the Penguin of sorts. And I've got Scott Gold here today, who is not a scheming crime lord. Unless you were scheming to take over the show behind my back, Scott.
I say nothing.
Yeah, you know, you're here for me. That's what you have to say. You just have to say you're here for me.
I'm here for you. I'm here for you. Whatever you need, that's what I do.
What's the problem? You know I care. Yeah, so this is an interesting show, The Penguin, right? Because I feel like, yeah, it's a comic book show, but to me it feels less like something from DC Comics and more like a kind of a Gotham version of The Sopranos.
Absolutely. That was my take too. It's a real gamble to have a show about Gotham without Bruce Wayne or Batman or Alfred, all of the heroes that we come to, you know, long associate with, you know, this franchise.
Yeah.
And, all of the villains kind of exist, you know, to have a foil to this superhero. So what happens when you don't have the superhero and you just have the villains? And, you know, it could be boring and like people could just say, well, why do I care about the criminals of Gotham? I want to see Batman kicking ass. Or it could be a really well-scripted, very interesting, well-acted crime show that so happens to fit into this universe. And that's what they went with. And also F-bombs, just throw a bunch of F-bombs around. We don't get to see a lot of F-bombs in Batman, but just throw the language in, make it gritty, dark, even for Batman universe, gritty and dark.
Yeah.
And see what happens.
I kind of got a sense of what we were in for when the Penguin was riding the subway and there's some guy like dressed like the Riddler from the previous movie. And the Penguin looks at him, he's like, get the fuck out of here. I just loved that. I think you can tell from our tone that I think we're both really into this take on. I really liked the Batman, especially the longer I thought about it, the more I liked the Batman. And I really liked Colin Farrell as the Penguin.
Against my better judgment, I really enjoy Colin Farrell as Oz Cobb or the Penguin here under a giant Academy Award winning mountain of latex. I can't even imagine the artistry and effort that it takes to ugly this man up in that fashion, because he is not pleasant to look at.
No, and he's completely unrecognizable. I mean, I have to remind myself, I mean, I'm so immersed in this incredible performance that I just forget. It's like you're literally watching the Penguin.
Yeah, he inhabits this role in just such a kind of Brando-esque, and I really don't want to compare Colin Farrell to Marlon Brando, but I mean, he just is so all in on this character that it really is almost impossible to just say that what I am seeing right now is a very, very handsome Irish actor.
Yeah,
because there's some serious cognitive dissonance in my mind. That's how good the acting and the performance and the costume and makeups are.
Yeah, I mean, there's the sort of the voice acting, which borrows a lot, I think, from James Gandolfini's Tony Soprano, but also just the physical acting, the waddling. You know, he's this like thick, semi-deformed dude with tons of body hair.
The last thing I wanted to see in this series was naked hairy Penguin, but we got it.
He's hairy. You'd think the Penguin wouldn't be hairy. You think he'd be slick.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we got from Tim Burton's Danny DeVito Penguin back in the early 90s, but this is a very different Penguin, and it's you know, it is so dark and gritty, but also it's kind of refreshing. Like, I find myself very invested in his story. Like, you know, what is going to be saleable about this character? Why are we going to, are we going to root for him? Or are we going to root against him? Like, you know, what's going to pull us in?
I don't find myself rooting for him. Like, you don't want this guy is a sleazy monster. You know, he is a bad person. You know, he'll stop at nothing to become like the ultimate crime boss of Gotham. And that includes just wanton murder, endless double crossing, constant scheming, and you know he's a cruel, evil bastard.
But there is a soft, tender side to him that a little bit that we're shown that makes him, you know, at least slightly likable. Like, he's not Jeffrey Dahmer, right?
No, Jeffrey Dahmer is the Kristen Milioti character, who's his foil. She's a serial killer.
Yeah, she's even more terrifying than he is, for sure. Yeah.
Is also, thank God, recognizably Kristen Milioti, you know.
And thank goodness for that.
Yeah, because she is, yes, beautiful woman, but also like just such a tremendous actor. My God, she's good in this. And she plays Sophia Falcone, who is the daughter of murdered Gotham crime boss Carmine Falcone. He was killed in the Batman movie. And this show kind of examines the after effect, the struggle for power to take control of the power vacuum. And there's warring families, and the Penguin is like waddling around, manipulating everybody,
trying to set up a mob war, really.
Yeah, so he can come out on top. And so he's got Sophia is his foil and sort of his partner in crime, and definitely the only person in the show who is as intelligent as he is.
Oh, for sure.
And she's working her own angles. And Kristen Milioti is really fantastic in this as well. And then the third major character, I would say, and it's going to develop even more so, is this kid named Victor, this sort of stuttering kid, I guess, from the projects. I mean, he's from some bombed out Gotham neighborhood. And, you know, the Penguin catches him trying to carjack his purple Maserati, this awesome purple Maserati, his evil Batmobile. And he ends up, I don't know, for some reason, takes a shine to this kid and ends up adopting him and making him drive him around.
And that's what I think that the tenderness comes in, is that he sees a little bit of himself in this kid, because they're both from the bottom, you know, they're both, you know, struggling to kind of make ends meet. And I see a lot of the narrative is this huge struggle between, you know, the haves and have nots of the crime world of Gotham. You know, you have, you know, your Falcones and you have your Maronis that are kind of in, you know, whatever the Gotham mafia version of an, you know, ivory tower is.
The Cosa Nostra, the families. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but then you have all of your, you know, your soldiers and your thieves and, you know, various underlings that are, you know, also scrapping for power and, you know, whatever they can get without being murdered in the process. And that's where Penguin is really, really good and obviously very ruthless. But at the same time, he does take a shine to this kid and makes him his driver. And he's, you know, we see a couple of tender moments between the two of them where clearly, like, he sees a little bit of himself in this young kid. I don't know. I kind of have a feeling that Victor isn't going to make it out of this one alive, but
or is going to end up doing something real nasty himself. You know, there's an arc taking place there. It kind of reminds me, and I saw a piece that talked about this as well. Reminds me of the relationship between Walter White and Jesse Pinkman in Breaking Bad. And so here we go. This is a Batman show, essentially a DC universe show, and we're referencing The Sopranos and Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I dig it. I didn't even think about that one, but it's totally apt, you know, because Jesse was this, you know, kind of sweet kid who had a little bit of a criminal streak that was molded by someone way more evil than him to become something a lot more dangerous and awful.
Right, because Victor, again, yeah, he's a carjacker and he's in desperate straits, but he seems like a nice guy overall. But he has fallen in to the orbit of one of the most evil people in the DC universe.
Definitely. And you know, I'll tell you something that I really enjoy is that there is an intelligence to the writing here. And I had to like really pay attention to all of the machinations and the schemes and the double crossing, double, triple, quadruple, quintuple crossing to just, you know, kind of keep track of everything. And that was actually really refreshing.
It's extremely well written and it's not boring. And there's a couple of dream sequences, but there aren't a ton of flashbacks. The narrative makes sense. And the actual individual bits of dialogue are not completely devoid of cliches. It's still a crime show, but they're it's fresh. There's some fresh detail. And again, it's just topped off by these two incredible performances by Kristen Milioti, who's very creepy and weird and compelling. And, you know, again, Colin Farrell, I mean, my God.
Yeah, he's knocking this one out of the park again, against my better wishes, because I always found his acting to be a little bit, you know, like smug, handsome guy. But oof, you cannot deny how magnificent he is in this role.
Yeah. And it really makes you want to. I mean, this isn't going to be the James Gunn DC universe. You know, this is going to be, this is the side universe of a gritty, realistic Gotham. But it makes you want to see more of it.
Yeah, I'm all in. I can't wait to watch the rest of this show. I think it's great.
All right. And so, Scott, you're going to come back about, let's say, 12 to 13 minutes. And we're going to talk about a very different kind of comic book TV show.
Can't wait.
Abracadabra. I'll see you soon.
Have you ever dreamt of a better version of yourself? Younger, more beautiful, more perfect.
Pretty girls should always smile.
I had a ticket for Friday afternoon to go see The Substance, which is a new body horror movie that is creating lots of controversy. And, you know, in the end, I just couldn't do it. I could not. See, I just ended up not.
Yeah, what happened? You chickened out.
I chickened out. I was reading the reviews and they were like, oh, the last 30 minutes will make you question your sanity. It is so disgusting and blah. And I'm just like, you know, here's the thing. Stephen Garrett is here, obviously, with me to talk about The Substance. Hello.
Hello. I was brave enough to watch this film, by the way.
Yeah, I know. Well, I really hate body horror. Like, I hate things coming out of other things. I hate people turning into werewolves. I can't stand it.
Interesting.
And this is apparently the ultimate things coming out of other things movie. And I just couldn't do it. I understand that The Substance is an important film. People love it. People are saying it's one of the movies of the year. I've had people, reliable sources, not you, but other reliable sources, say that it was the best movie of the year. I know you liked it.
Wow.
Yeah, the best movie.
That does not sound like a reliable source, but,
well,
you know.
I mean, okay, enough. Yeah, the person who said it is a little crazy, but that's okay. You know, you have to be a little crazy to love film.
True.
Is this Substance really as disgusting as they say?
It's pretty disgusting. It's certainly the most disgusting movie I've seen this year. And it's been a few years since I've seen something as gleefully gross as this movie. I mean, it's a real bloody, pulpy mess, and it really revels in it. I mean, it's a comedy, fundamentally. And I've never laughed at so much viscera being sprayed across people in a movie. It's gross.
It's that gross. It's literally that gross.
It's really pretty gross. I mean, is it X-rated gross? I don't know. Mm. But it's pretty extreme and pretty graphic. It's rare. I mean, to see a movie like this also with Demi Moore in it. I mean, she's maybe not the star that she once was. And that's, of course, part of the, you know, the theme of the movie is faded stardom. But still, to see somebody, a major Hollywood actor, being in this kind of wild French, although English language movie, is pretty impressive.
And she's being touted. It's being touted as one of the performances of the year. And I suppose if in our lifetime we've seen Oscars go to Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto and Cher.
And the whale. Who's the whale?
Oh, Brendan Fraser. Yeah.
Brendan Fraser, Oscar winner, Academy Award winner, Brendan right. Fraser.
Right.
Oh, anything can happen.
And Short Round. Why not?
That's right.
why not Demi Moore, after all?
She's good. She's great in this. I mean, she really is good. It's also very much a role I wouldn't say she was born to play, but fits her really like a glove. I think the director, Coralie, I might mangle her last name. I think it's Fargi. I think wrote, if not with her specifically in mind, then certainly it feels like it, you know?
Yeah.
And also it's, you know, okay, so she plays, Demi Moore plays a faded actress who won an Oscar and who was really big once upon a time, but it's been a couple decades since her prime. So tracks pretty closely. And she has an aerobics show. That's where it starts to go off the rails.
An aerobics show in 2020.
Exactly. 24. Yeah. I mean, already you kind of have to buy into a lot of the absurdity, and it's not trying to be realistic. So anytime you try to make it feel realistic, it's going to just reject you instantly. But anyway, yeah, she's got an aerobics show, but there is a scene where you see her leave the studio and she's going down a hallway. She leaves the place where they're shooting it, but she's going down the studio hallway, and there are big posters of her through the years, and it really is Demi Moore's face as she was, you know, back in her heyday and through to now, you know. So she's still, you know, absolutely beautiful and in great shape, and, you know, it makes sense. You buy that she's got an aerobics show, although you don't buy that there is an aerobics show, because that's ridiculous.
Right. No one does aerobics.
Yeah, and the whole thing is kind of preposterous. Dennis Quaid plays the grotesque white male gaze personified in a greasy, gross, loudmouth executive who hires and fires like crazy and just wants the latest, greatest, you know, hottest star he can possibly get, and knows that Demi Moore, who just turns 50, her character turns 50, Elizabeth is her name, Elizabeth Sparkle. She turns 50, and on her 50th birthday, they fire her. And she panics, but gets a note slipped in her pocket with a flash drive that says, "This will change your life." And of course, buyer beware, right? That cuts both ways, that phrase. So the movie is about transformation and reinvention, and you know, it gets this kind of like magic elixir in the shape of this injectable neon colored fluid called The Substance. And that promises to make her a younger, faster, better version of herself. And it basically means there's a body that emerges out of her body, ergo the things coming out of things. She kind of splits out of her spinal area. You know what I mean? Like, there's a clean break in her skin.
Oh, that sounds great. That sounds fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, that becomes Margaret Qualley, whose name is Sue, or she names herself Sue. Do they share consciousness? You'd think they would, but there's no real indication that they're on the same wavelength. They seem to be fighting. They seem to be at odds from the moment it happens. The magic curse of this, the magic spell, the rules are, you know, you do turn into a pumpkin after midnight. You have to switch back. You have to share bodies once a week. And Margaret Qualley, who's Sue, she stores Elizabeth basically in a closet in the bathroom. Don't ask. It doesn't make any sense. She also gets some power tools and makes a closet, a hidden closet from the one of the tile walls, becomes a door. It's preposterous. Anyway, and so the younger one wants more time and doesn't want to have just a week off, a week on, week off. And so that's where it starts to get abused. They bend the rules. You're not supposed to bend the rules. Bad things happen. Things get gross.
Well, I mean, it sounds like, look, it sounds like a great kind of side.
It's a metaphor. I don't know if you got that. It's a metaphor.
Metaphor for the way society treats aging women. I get it.
And the way you fight yourself, man. You can't escape yourself. You have to love yourself.
I think if I injected myself with a substance, I think just an identical version of myself would emerge from my back.
No older or younger.
No, maybe like a couple years younger. just like someone in their early 50s, you know. Which, yeah. But I mean, this is more about women, right? Because men don't care. Men, you know, I personally, like, as a, you know, middle to approaching late middle aged man, I have always wanted to be this age. So
there you go. Yeah. We age like fine wine.
Or I think of it more like, you know, like cheese. You know, like I'm stinky but delicious.
Yeah. And I mean, this is, I think what's novel about this is, you know, I don't know what it is in France that there are all these female directors who are kind of popping up and embracing genre and body horror. Julie,
like Titan,
which you did see. You didn't wince at that, right? That has something.
No, but that there wasn't, you know, there was something coming out of something in that, but it was also like a birth.
Right.
You know, and it was a woman giving birth to a car, which, you know, those are two things that men love, women and cars. So it's
perfect.
I didn't, you know, Titan was definitely visceral and challenging, but not in what sounds like in, this is more like, this is a horror movie.
This really is much more of a pulpy horror movie that I think works. I gave it 4 stars. I think that could be 3 stars maybe, or 3.5 or something. I don't know, out of 5. It's not a perfect film. I don't think it's a perfect all. You know, I think Titan is an amazing film. That's like a 5-star film. But
yeah,
this,
I agree.
It doesn't, like, there's more going on thematically and otherwise. Like that I think as a sort of neo myth works much better than this. This just feels very obvious. It's very loud and brassy, and that's the filmmaker's style. Like, she loves, you know, movies from the 80s, like RoboCop and The Empire Strikes Back and things like that. Things that are big and bold and brassy and stylish. And you see it in her filmmaking. She's very much like a Hollywood director. She's like a Paul Verhoeven from the 80s. You know what I mean?
Well, I love Paul Verhoeven movies. And, you know, Starship Troopers, RoboCop, those certainly were not movies for the squeamish. But it still wasn't. It wasn't sort of endless things coming out of other things. I just can't do it. I can't do it, Stephen. I'm sorry.
That's fair. I don't think it'll be like her signature style for every one of her movies, but it fits the subject matter of this. And I think it's, you know, speaking as a man watching horror movies, to see one done by a woman with a woman's kind of priorities and phobias and, you know, dealing and working through the issues that a woman faces more than maybe a guy, as you were saying earlier. I think is really kind of fascinating to watch, you know, because there's this real schizophrenia in our society about beauty standards. There's a real schizophrenia among women and within women about how they process these standards and whether right. they accept them, reject them, you know, it's interesting to see a movie wrestle with them.
Well, there's nothing like listening to a couple of guys talk about female, female beauty standards on a podcast. Stephen Garrett, thank you so much. The Substance is in theaters now. If you like things coming out of other things, this is your dream movie. If you don't, you know, maybe a buyer beware.
It's a thinker. It's also, it's going to make you gag.
That's what people say about me too. All right. Thanks, Stephen.
You're welcome.
The Scarlet Witch took my powers. We're going to walk the road to get it back.
The road is a myth. It's a con.
It's a death wish.
What is that?
Join me.
If we make it to the end, it'll give you the thing you want the most.
I'm feeling like I want to cause some damage.
The Penguin was not the only major comic book related television show to premiere in September. Disney Plus and Marvel have given us, a fairly fresh show for Halloween. It is the ultimate Marvel witch show. It's called Agatha All Along and stars Katherine Hahn as Agatha Harkness, who was the big bad of WandaVision. And now she has her own show and is no longer really a villain. She's more like an anti-hero. And I've conjured up Scott Gold once again to talk about Agatha All Along. He wrote about it in this week's Book and Film Globe. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Neil. Just fresh off the broom and isn't my butt tired.
Yeah, hi, there you go. Well, I've assembled the coven and you are pretty much the only member at this point. I guess my dogs. You, me, my dogs. Oh, sure, we'll bring my wife in. And that's enough. That's enough to walk the witch's road.
Are the dogs magical?
They have their charms. Let's put it that way.
Okay, that'll do.
They're not like the Hollywell sisters from Charmed, but they're good enough. So obviously we're sitting here making wry comments about witches, and Agatha All Along is the witchiest show I've ever seen. It's witchier than Hocus Pocus, really, when it comes down to it, and it's just full of really fun witch lore. And Marvel, you never know what you're going to get when you tune into a Marvel show, right?
Absolutely. And I really didn't know what I was going to get with WandaVision. I saw the, you know, in the teasers, the kind of TV stuff, but it was a really weird show, probably the weirdest MCU television show to date. And I remember watching the first couple episodes and being like, I don't know if I'm into this. It's kind of corny, but it's one of those shows that really rewarded you when you found out kind of what was going on and the narrative turned. And then by the end, like, I was locked in. And when we find out that Agatha is not just the nosy neighbor, but really the big bad and, you know, a hundred centuries old witch who's trying to take Wanda's power. And it got really great. And I was like, oh, okay, this isn't dumb. It's actually really smart. and also very tragic. That show was very tragic, but we did get Katherine Hahn's just brilliant scenery chewing performance as Agatha. And I guess it was just so captivating that they're like, we have to keep rolling with this. This character is too good. And also, you know, she has a long history in the comics and there's a lot of lore and how she fits in the Marvel universe and so forth. So like, you know what? Hey, let's do an Agatha show.
I mean, she's very different in the MCU than she is in the comics. In the comics, she's an old lady and she's all involved with the Fantastic Four, but it's very different. You know, here, you know, Katherine Hahn, you know, is not a teenager, but she's not an old lady, and she is, you know, extremely, you know, she's a young, she's compelling and attractive, and something, she's up to something. We don't know what yet. We've only seen three episodes. She's not, she's never completely sincere in her goals, but at the same time, she's obviously, like, they're not really setting her up to be a villain, and there's a huge ensemble that she is controlling. She's basically assembles a coven to walk some mystical thing called the Witch's Road in order to regain her powers, which she lost at the end of WandaVision. That's the premise.
Right. Yeah. She was left at the end of WandaVision powerless and still in the hex while all of her neighbors and everybody else, the poor people of Westview, like, I can't even imagine how horrible it must have been for them to be trapped in this really weird television hex controlled by a super powerful witch.
Talk to anybody to whom that's happened. It's not fun.
No, it does not seem fun. But yeah, she's left in the hex for years while everybody else is out, and her neighbors think that she's just weird. And the cool thing is, I thought, you know, oh, hey, fun witchy show. And we start the opening was just really so much fun and very surprising, and also very in line with WandaVision's kind of homages to television, the history of television and different television tropes and styles.
She's basically trapped in a parody of Mayor of Easttown.
Exactly.
Which I did not expect.
I know. I was like, wait, what is this Agatha? Like, what's happening now?
My wife looked at me. She's like, I don't get it. I'm like, it's a parody of Mayor of Easttown. She's like, what's that? I'm like, you know, that show with Kate Winslet. She's like, I don't have no idea what you're talking about. I'm like,
it's a gruff talking cop that drinks coffee at a murder scene. This is a thing.
And speaks in a Pennsylvania accent. Look, it's good. I was like, don't worry. I have a feeling it's going to go away. And then Aubrey Plaza shows up and, you know, sort of the cracks start to show. So, you know, you have a very expensive cast here in a lot of ways. You have Aubrey Plaza playing. We don't really know what she's up to yet. She was only in the first episode so far. But then you have Patti LuPone playing one of the coven, the great Broadway star, Patti LuPone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and she is fantastic as always. And I've seen some interviews with the cast and they're just kind of, they were a little starstruck. And you're talking about some, you know, some actors with some serious chops. With Katherine Hahn, she's, no, you know, Sasheer Zamata was on Saturday Night Live, totally underused on that show, by the way. Aubrey Plaza, you know, some other heavy hitters, Deborah Jo Rupp from That 70s Show, and
sure,
other properties.
And WandaVision. And she was in WandaVision.
And she was in WandaVision too. So they brought her back because, you know, I mean, I just can't get enough. She's just flustered and hilarious and just has that very Deborah Jo Rupp sensibility, which adds really, really well to the coven. And it's so fun to see, you know, this ensemble cast on this treacherous mission on a magical road filled with basically trials. If you were to just kind of write down and like just say, okay, here's the premise of this show, you'd be like, okay, like all of this has been done a million times before and, you know, different versions. They keep to the MCU, but they also like really play the characters off each other. And we start to see like how they're interacting and they trust or not trust one another. And, you know, slowly spooling out the details of what each character wants. Like Sasheer Zamata's character, Jennifer, is a potions witch who is bound, whatever that means. I guess her powers are kind of bound. Ali An plays a witch named Alice, whose witch mother mysteriously vanished or was killed. And she's looking for answers. And of course, the great Patti LuPone is a clairvoyant whose fortunes have gone down the toilet and she's looking to restore some of her former glory. So they all want something, which in screenwriting is like, you know, screenwriting 101, right? You got to want something.
It is. It's not like the previous show we discussed. It's not real nuanced. You know, it's not real subtle. It feels like this has been storyboarded with the note cards and the yarn attaching the note cards. It's been writers roomed to death, but it's very, you know, this is Marvel, you know, it's all sort of fitting into this larger picture. And, you know, just beyond all of that, it's just, you know, it's just fun and entertaining.
Absolutely. So much fun. Just in time for Halloween too. Like, it's totally getting me into the mood.
Slightly scary, but not really scary.
Yeah, there's a little bit. I mean, I think it's gonna, you know, so another thing we should probably mention is that Agatha is kind of, her hand is forced. They need to go down the witch's road because they are being pursued by a very scary coven called the Salem Seven. And we get a little hint of them in the first couple of episodes, and they are appropriately terrifying, clad in dark cloaks and doing kind of that Japanese horror movie spider walk thing.
Oh yeah.
That just creeps the hell out of everybody.
Yeah.
And so I think we're going to get a lot more of that. And that also raises the stakes and adds a little bit of urgency to the narrative. But I think what really sets this apart and keeps it from being just a trite witch coven kind of fun Halloween-y kind of thing, which honestly would be great just to begin with. And that's kind of what it is. But the performances of some of these actresses just really, it's very Broadway. It's very over the top, especially Katherine Hahn, Patti LuPone. Like, they really play it up. And I just, you know, it just makes me want to make more popcorn and just start munching because it's just, or maybe candy corn, I should say.
Popcorn, and then you throw some candy corn into the bowl.
There you go.
That's what I would do if I were you. But yeah, if I weren't on some kind of horrible austere diet, I don't even know what food is anymore, Scott. I'm like post food at this point.
I feel so sorry for you.
You don't even know the trials I've been enduring, the food trials I'm enduring. I feel like I'm walking the witch's road of diet. But that's sort of aside complaint. I don't really have a lot of complaints about this show. I mean, is it some kind of like great and subtle work of art? No. And if you don't love the Marvel Universe, you might find yourself saying, what the hell is this? But on the other hand, if you're kind of a gothy, witchy person, if you like witch lore, there's a lot of great witch lore. And the closing credits show like all kinds of fun pop culture witch stuff. And it's very clear that this show is attempting to fit into that, all the way down to its absolute banger of a theme song, which you and I liked it so much, we were texting about it.
I've had it in my head for the last 2 weeks, at least 2 weeks. It's stuck there. It's up there with the Book of Boba Fett for earworm TV show theme songs of recent note.
And here's the thing too, right? Like I was arguing mildly with my wife. I was like, the cast sings it themselves, I really think.
They do.
Like, why wouldn't they? You know, you have Patti LuPone.
Yeah, and there was actually, I think it was either Catherine Hahn or one of the other actors was talking about like how intimidating it was to stand in a room and have to like harmonize with Patti LuPone, like who's been singing on Broadway for a very long time and doing a really good job of it.
On the other hand, you know, you have to rise to the level of your competition.
Indeed. I think, you know, a rising tide lifts all witch boats, whatever kind of boats, which is
all brooms.
All brooms.
Rising tide lifts all brooms. And so I will say this, that the song does not, there's sort of a version of it in the first episode, but the full performance of the song kind of comes toward the end of episode two. In case that's all you want to watch. But I don't know. I mean, I would recommend this. It's something that, you know, I'm willing to watch this the day it comes out. Like, I don't find myself wanting to wait.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I find myself really excited for it because, you know, a lot of TV does get, you know, like The Penguin, very dark, gritty, violent. And there's a place for that. And I love it. But sometimes you need a little bit of a media palate cleanser. And to that end, it's not so bubbly and effervescent that it just kind of makes you want to, you know, gag because it's too sweet. But at the same time, it's just fun. It's entertainment. And I think that's sometimes lost because it's not an easy thing to do, to balance like intelligent writing with keeping something fun without it becoming like overly silly. And for a Marvel property, that's a tightrope. But I think they do a really good job and I can't wait to see how this plays out.
That is the tightrope that all Marvel properties walk. And I feel like Agatha, all along, Jack Schaefer, with the woman who created WandaVision, is also the showrunner for this. And you can kind of see the sort of quality control there. So I would say Scott and I, in addition to recommending the very dark and gritty The Penguin, also highly recommend this cotton candy show, Agatha All Along, which is airing now on Disney Plus, but also on Hulu. And I think you can also, at this point, like, you never know, like, I turn on an app, I'm like, I could probably watch this on ESPN at this point. It's going to be on, after the Friday night, after the Braves-Padres game, you'll watch Agatha All Along.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, Scott Gold, thank you so much. I will talk to you soon.
Always great to be here, Neil.
All right. Thank you so much, Scott, for the Halloween season. Agatha All Along is airing on Disney Plus. Scott also talked to me about The Penguin, which is airing on Max and is also extremely good. Both those shows are good. Really, you're dead inside if you don't like those shows. I just don't see why anyone wouldn't. I mean, I guess if they don't like comic book shows, they don't like crime, if they don't like witches, they hate life, they won't like those shows. Also, thanks to Stephen Garrett for seeing The Substance and for enduring my fear of The Substance and for talking to me about The Substance. The Substance is in theaters now, and you will not have a weak reaction to it. You will either love it or hate it. That's pretty much what I'm getting from people who have seen it. I am Neil Pollack. I am the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We will bring you this show next week and the week after and for many weeks to come. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for reading the site, and I will talk to you soon.
Original production.
The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. then be that guy. Come shop at the Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's the Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.